Is that thing smack? Is it perhaps louder? Okay, is it good? So the plan of my talk is as follows. First, I will give a brief introduction to state what is the main problem. Then I will also make a brief review of two-point correlation functions, what is the way to compute them, and then move on to the main point, namely three-point correlation functions, where first I will discuss some general features, then introduce Polmeyer reduction, and then explain various steps how one can get the regularized Polmeyer area, at least for part of the problem dealing with three-point correlation functions. Then I'll give our final answer, discuss some of its properties, and give summary and outlook. So the main questions for CFT is, of course, to find the spectrum. So the two main questions, as in an ordinary two-dimensional CFT. The first question, number zero, is find the spectrum of conformal weights, which is equivalent to finding the eigenvalues of the Delta-Hessian operator, or anomalous dimensions of operators. What is delta? Of course, it depends on lambda. It can be computed perturbatively, and from integrability, we have a lot of information, complete information, almost complete information about this value. Now, the second key ingredient, as you all know, is to find the OP coefficients. So once we normalize our operators with this one here, it's the two-point functions, then the space-time dependence of the three-point function is completely fixed, and the coefficient here is has a definite physical meaning, and this is the OP coefficient. And once delta I and CRJK is unknown, all higher point correlation functions are in principle determined explicitly. And here also the CRJK will depend on the lambda. So now the main problem is, so we have a lot of information about the spectral problem. The main open question is to find methods for CRJK. So before I describe in detail, let me review first the main classes of operators in an equal to four supernumeraries, which can be classified with regards to the strong coupling behavior. So the simplest operators are BPS operators, which correspond to supergravity modes. Their anomalous dimensions are protected, so they do not depend on the coupling, so can be computed perturbatively at tree level, and the answer will hold to infinite coupling. And these states are in this context commonly called light states, because they represent very light, massless modes of the string in ADS5 cosis 5. Now, operators which have non-trivial anomalous dimensions, which depend on coupling, corresponds to massive string states. And then the lightest of those are so-called short string states, like Konishi operator, and we can call them medium states. These are also a very interesting class of states because the energies at strong coupling is known. It's described by roughly the flat space answer with an effective string coupling of lambda to the 1/4. Finally, if we go to operators which have large charges and spins, they correspond to, at least a class of them, will correspond to classical string states, and these states are called heavy states. Now, the distinction here is not so clear-cut, because we can take these operators and take the charges to be very, very large, and they can be roughly described as extended string states. So, I mean, there's no kind of, the interface here is about blood, but it's enough. Purposes. So what we'll be interested in stock is to describe, to consider just heavy states, but only subsector of those states whose whole dynamics is only in the S5 part of ADS5 cosus 5. So all the charges of the operators are only out charges, there are no spins in ADS. Now the current status of OP coefficients is the protected OP coefficients are known in this program of the state since a long time ago. A twig coupling for unprotected operators, a lot is known at three level and at one loop, so it's 4 centimeters, and Kolya Gromov will describe it in the next talk. Now, with strong coupling, we have now a lot of information about the case of heavy, heavy light states, where we have two heavy operators and one light, and it's basically computed using classical solutions for two-point function between two heavy states, which is well known, and integrating with the propagator of the light supergravity modes. And recently, also, string field theory methods in the light cone gauge were used by Klose and McLaughlin, some more general cases. Now, our aim was to try to develop methods for the computation of CHHH, where all the operators are heavy and typically distinct. So, just to recall, the ADCFT dictionary links anomalous dimensions of operators with energies of corresponding string states. And in this language, integrability is usually formulated, and we have the full answers, let's say, for this problem. But alternatively, we might try to compute the same quantities using two-point correlation functions of those operators. And now the prescription for those two-point correlation functions for supergravity modes has been known since the beginning of ADS-CFT. It's very well developed. And recently our work was to try to generalize it for massive string states, which are classical string states. This is also an early approach by Tsuji and approach using vertex operators by Bubinder and Saiti. So let me just describe what is involved in such a computation. So for two-point functions, we pass from Green's function of the light state, which now if this light state is kind of heavy, relatively, then the Green's function is well approximated by a geodesic. So typically we have this type of graph. Now, if we want to pass to classical string states, we'll get kind of flattened Wooten diagrams, which are classical solution which approaches to points on the boundary, modulo some caveats for strings with spins. But here we will just consider states with only non-trivial dynamics in the S5, so this will not be a problem. Now, once we have a prescription of computing two-point correlation functions in such a way, then we can at least formulate the problem of computing three-point correlation functions by trying to construct a classical solution with the topology of a sphere with three punctures, which should approach the boundary at 3 points, and the approach should be characteristic of the here. So this solution should look like this solution for the given operator which is inserted here. So now let me just briefly go through what is the what are the steps which are necessary to compute these two-point correlation functions. So first of all, at the classical level, we can consider a Euclidean Rothschild with the topology of a sphere with two punctures. Now, this configuration can be obtained as a Minkowskian cylinder amplitude, which computes the Green's function of a string, and then we have to take the saddle point on the moduli parameter, which turns out to be complex. And at the saddle point, we have just this Euclidean Rothschild. Now, the solution is typically a bit ugly, if we look at how it looks in target space. Namely, it's really complex. So all the nice picture of rotating strings goes away, because usually, instead of cosine and sine, we have cosh and sinh. So therefore, if we just look at the solution, it looks a bit crazy. But nevertheless, it gives the correct results. So one has to treat solutions not as kind of physical string state, but just as saddle points of an action, which can be in the complex plane. Now, for the operators which we are considering now, the ADS part of the solution is trivial. It's very simple. It's just a geodesic, which links 2 points, and it's cut off at target space cutoff z equal to epsilon here. Now, the S5 part of the solution also is very simple. It is just a big rotated spinning string solution. But here the subtlety is that we have to include wave functions. So the contribution of the S5 part is really not only the action of the S5 solution, but also some contribution from the wave functions. And these quantities together, they transform the expression here into an integral of the Euclidean energy density. So putting the two contributions together, we get the ADS action of this solution, which this target space cut off, then the S5 energy integral, and putting them, those two things together, we get the correct expression for the two-point function with the delta, which is characteristic of the energy of the rotating string. Now, just I would like to say that even for two-point correlation functions, still some open questions remain, so it would be interesting to solve some problems. So here, basically, we have two approaches, like the vertex operators of Satin and Bubinder. Here, it seems, which are inserted exactly at the punctures. So here, there seems to be no general method of constructing them for arbitrary classical string states. On the other hand, when we looked at those classical wave functions, then morality should be just vertex operators which are evaluated at the classical solution. However, if we want to do it really precisely, we will see that, in fact, we have always a Rothschild cutoff around the puncture, so the mapping is not so completely clear. So some questions which one could try to solve is, which are a bit open. So first of all, how to construct classical vertex operators for arbitrary finite gap solutions, which should be very interesting to understand. And also how to make a precise mapping between the two regularized approaches. Now, the reason why it is interesting is that if we want to go to three-point correlation functions, we have to somehow include the wave functions of vertex operators. And now, it's not clear if, for example, the contributions from three-point functions and two-point functions will cancel out, because there may be some finite mismatch between the regularizations. And it's not clear what is the best, the most efficient way to incorporate those effects. So all this will be relevant for the S5 case of the story. So, but it's something which is very interesting to solve, and it already appears on the two-point correlation function level. Okay, so now, after this brief review, I would like to move on to three-point correlation functions. So what we, just to recall, we have to find a classical solution, which is the topology of a sphere with three punctures. And close to the punctures, the solutions should approach the known solutions for two-point functions. Now, for operators with non-trivial charges only on the S5, which is the case which we choose here, it turns out that this is a very nice simplification. Namely, of course, at strong coupling, the S5 part and the ADS part almost completely decouple. So the equations of motion are just completely independent. So we have to solve two separate problems, one in ADS5, another in S5. And they're only linked to the Virasoro constraints, which links that the energy momentum tensor for the redshift theory on ADS plus the energy momentum tensor on the S5 just gives zero, where here W is a holomorphic coordinate on the punctured sphere. So the S5 part is difficult because it involves those wave functions of the appropriate states, and it's probably very complicated because we can start from very complicated finite gap solutions at each of the punctures. So we did not really have any progress with that, so we just considered in this work just the ADS part. So here, the first simplification which occurs for such operators which have no spins in ADS is that we can put all the operator insertion points just on a line, and therefore, the problem will just reduce just to an ADS2 subspace, which is something which is very, very simple in principle. However, one thing to note is that this is not really a minimal area problem. If it would be a minimal area problem, then it would be completely solvable and there would be no problem at all to solve. However, here, the ADS energy momentum tensor is different from zero, so this will be prescribed. A priori, it's much simpler than in the S5 part, but it's still quite complicated, and for the moment, we don't even have a single exact analytical expression for the concrete classical solution. So it seems perhaps it does not really exist in a closed form. So from now on, I will concentrate just on this part. So the first thing to do is we will have to somehow find this ADS energy momentum tensor to specify the problem completely. So we have to find, just to recall, the classical solutions just following from only the ADS2 bosonic action with the constraint, the holomorphic constraint that this quantity should be this given holomorphic function T of W. And at the punctures, the classical solution should approach those given points in a way similar to two-point functions of appropriate operators. Now we can just set the punctures to any three points on the sphere by SL2C transformations. And now it turns out what is very nice is that the right-hand side of the Virasoro constraint here can be completely found explicitly. So it's completely determined in terms of the conformal weights of the specific operators. So how to do it? So first of all, we know the solutions for the two-point function. And since this solution here close to the puncture should be very similar, we can now compute what is TADS for the two-point function, and from that infer what should be the behavior of this T close to the punctures. So in particular, for the two-point function, we find that the T of two-point function is delta squared divided by 4 divided by W squared. So it has a double pole with a coefficient which is related to the anonymous dimension of the given operator. So now we see that T of W should have poles of order at most 2 at each of the three punctures. Moreover, it's a holomorphic function. And then also taking into account how T transforms under an inversion, which follows just from its definition as an energy momentum tensor, one can fix T of W uniquely. So for example, in the simplest case that we consider like having two equal conformal weights, delta at W equal to plus or minus 1, and delta infinity at W equal to infinity, then T of W is given by this expression, which is A squared is related to the ratio of this conformal weight to this conformal weight. So it's completely explicit and simple function. Okay, so this defines our problem. Now, it turns out that the best way to approach the problem is to go to following the same route as for polygonal Wilson loops, which was initiated by Aldey and Malacena, namely to perform a primary reduction of the problem in ADS2. So here, it turns out that the ADS2 sigma model, what is primary reduction? It is just a change of variables in such a way that we take the action density and evaluate and define gamma tilde by the following formula, where T of W is our given energy momentum tensor. Then it turns out that this gamma tilde solves the modified Singe-Gordon equations. So this is the way which one would do, like, from the outset. However, since you saw before that this T of W has a zero somewhere on the real sheet, therefore, it's not very convenient because this quantity has to be non-zero, because the metric has to be non-degenerate everywhere outside of the punctures. So it's convenient to modify a bit the primary prescription to something like that, which does not have this problem. Because if T is zero, then this is, here's an exponent, so there's no problem with any kind of similarities. And if we look at these expressions, then we see that this is really exactly the same formulas as the modified Singe-Gordon model for polygonal minimum surfaces in ADS3. However, unfortunately, there are still some key differences, so one cannot really just turn the crank and get the answer without too much problems just between the two setups. So first of all, the space-time interpretation is quite different, because in the case of polygonal Wilson loops, from this solution, one could get a minimal surface in ADS3. In our case, from solution, we will get a solution in ADS2. So the embedding space, target spaces are quite different. So in particular, there's no analogs of right and left linear problems, which are very natural in ADS3. So here we have ADS2, which does not have this type of thing. So one has to work out also the reconstruction formulas, which are a bit different. Now here, T of W is a rational function with three poles. There we had a polynomial. Finally, here it turns out that around each puncture, we have precise monodromy conditions, so we have two eigenfunctions. So we have uniquely specified pair of solutions at each puncture. This is in contrast with the case of polygonal Wilson loops, where in each asymptotic regime we had just only a small solution which was singled out, but the large solution was not completely, one could add to this large solution a multiple of the small solution, and still everything would be the same. So there are a couple of differences between the two setups. Also, the equations are really exactly the same. Okay. So where's integrability? So this generalized Singe-Gordon model is integrable. It has just a family of flat connections, where psi is a spectral parameter. And flatness is, of course, equivalent to the compatibility of the linear system, which is in turn equivalent to this modified Singe-Gordon equations of motion. And around each puncture, we have two solutions with known monodromies. So we can get those monodromies from the known expressions for the behavior of the primary reduction close to the punctures where two-point correlation functions solutions are enough. Okay, so now what we really need to compute is we need to compute the area. So the area, as it stands, is just this type of expression where we have to integrate outside on the three-punctured sphere with redshift cutoff, which is set in such a way so to get a finite expression. And now what is non-trivial here is that this epsilon I is fixed by the target space cutoff. So we want to put our target space cutoff for redshift at z equal to epsilon. The reason is that we have to here use the same definition of operators that we use in two-point correlation functions. Namely, we have to use exactly the same normalization. And this is quite non-trivial because it will require to get information about the target space, how the target space solution looks like from the Polmeier problem. Now, who can translate it into the Pollmeyer expression in terms of gamma, which we do not know. Also in terms of the components of the flat connection. And now we see we have difficulties. First of all, we have to integrate over a domain which we do not know, because we have those cutoffs which are unknown, and we do not know the integrand. So it's nice, it's good to separate the problem into two parts, one of which is such that everything is finite, so we only have an unknown integrand, but we integrate over the whole sphere. And another problem, we have a known integrand, but we integrate over unknown domain. And we can treat those two problems separately. So the first term is just a regularized Pollmeyer area, which depends on the solution, but not on the cutoff. Second term depends explicitly on the domain of integration, and namely on the reconstruction formulas for our solution. Okay. So now, how to get approach this regularized Pollmeyer area? So we can use the techniques of Aldrin, Malacena, Sever, and Vieira to evaluate it, with also there's still some twists involved. So recall that this is given by the following expression, where phi and phi bar are 2 by 2 matrices. So the procedure which was used for polygonal Wilson loop surface, Wilson loops, was to diagonalize phi w and then deal with the non-diagonal form of phi w bar. So if we diagonalize phi w, it turns out that all the dependence on gamma on the unknown Pollmeyer function just disappears, and this is given by a known quantity. But we have to take a square root of t, which means that if we want to use complex analysis, we have to really to go to the double cover of the double cover of the plane, given by y squared equal to t of w. And then the regularized Pollmeyer area can be written as an integral over this double cover of a wedge product of two forms which are closed, and one of them is this one. Another problem form, the second form, is this one, and we see that this is the easy one because it's explicit. This is the hard problem because here we have a dependence on the Pollmeyer function, which is not known explicitly.
Okay.
So now, what was the way in this paper? How to compute this type of expressions? We have a wedge product over a Riemann surface of two closed forms. Then the standard way, if sigma tilde had genus G, one had to use this Riemann bilinear identity or reciprocity to reduce the integral to product of integrals over cycles. However, here we run into a problem, because sigma tilde, the double cover, in fact, it has genus zero in punctures, so there are no cycles existent. Moreover, those forms have additional singularities at the punctures and also this form especially at the branch points of the double cover. So unfortunately, we cannot use the Riemann bilinear distance, and at least we couldn't identify in the literature a form which could be used, so we have to somehow generalize it to the present case. So there are two ways to proceed. The first way is just to try to reduce the proof of this identity exactly for sigma tilde without singularities, and we spent quite some time doing that, and then exploring this formula, but unfortunately, it's extremely messy. So it involves lots of integrals over lots of cycles, which did not seem to combine into some nice geometrical expressions. So at the end, we decided to do something different. Namely, since here this sigma tilde has double poles, the double poles can always be considered as limits of cuts, which shrink to a point. So we can treat the punctures as infinitesimal cuts, and then sigma tilde would be like genus 3, algebraic curve, and there will be only one complication, that there will be additional singularities at the branch points. So we can now use this part for the genus 3 case, and then deal with these singularities using the proof of the Riemann formula to get contributions coming from that. And then, so this is easier, and in fact, this is the way which is fastest to get to the final expressions. So just a couple of simplifying properties. First of all, the integrals of omega around the punctures are proportional to deltas. Integrals of omega around branch points vanish. Integrals of eta around punctures vanish. Then the contribution of the branch point is just pi over 6, which does not seem to depend on any conformal dimensions, which is quite surprising. initially it was for us, but it turns out that this pi over 6 is important for all kinds of physical limits of the final answer. So finally, at the end of the day, what we obtain is that this regularized Pollmeyer area is given by pi over 6 minus pi over 2. Here's some combinations of deltas and integrals over eta between the punctures. But we still do not know the integrals of etas over the punctures. And then we can again use the standard methods of polygonal Wilson loops, namely that those integrals are related to asymptotics of the products between local solutions of the linear system. So let me just backtrack and explain a bit what are the local solutions of the linear system and what is the formula which allows one to compute these etas. So around each puncture, we have two distinguished solutions of this linear system which have prescribed monodromes. And those monodromes are just defined in terms of delta k, which are the anonymous dimensions of the concrete of the operators at, given at each function. So they are given by some pseudo-momentum, which is given by this simple formula. And here I use psi equal to e to the theta. Now, given any two solutions of the linear system, then one can form the skew product between the two, which is just a function of the spectral parameter. And the standard solutions are normalized by k, k bar equal to 1. Okay. So now, the statement which was used in this paper was that if we want to find the integral of eta, we have to examine the leading theta going to minus infinity asymptotics of this overlap between k and l, where k and l are different functions. So here it's also a bit more complicated than for the Wilson loop case, because unfortunately here we do not have closed loops, closed cycles, but it's open cycles. So therefore, we have to regularize those products in order to find the projectors to the wave functions at the very end, anyway. So this will, because these expressions are divergent, so we have to use this regularization. But anyway, this can be done. So anyway, if we have the solution, KOL of theta, the leading part is just integral over omega, which we know. The subleading part is related to the integral over eta. But of course, now we have the question how to find this KLA of theta without solving in differential equations. Now, for Wilson loops, one got the Y system and TBA like equations. So here it turns out that we also get some functional equations, but they do not seem to have any form of Y system. But fortunately, they can be solved explicitly and exactly without too much problems. So, anyway, it's a much simpler situation in a way. So, how to do that? So how to find KL of theta without solving any differential equations? So first of all, we can see that KL of theta, those products, are really related to connections matrices between how to translate a basis of solution around one puncture to a basis of solution around another puncture. So we can collect, so we have a connection matrix between two punctures, and the matrix elements are just those products that we have between K bar L, K bar, K L bar, K L, and K L bar. Now we have to write all obvious compatibility relations between the two, between those matrices. So of course, if we pass from K to M, it should be the same as passing from K to L and L to M. If we go to K to L to K, and then again back to K, we should get the identity. And finally, the non-trivial condition is that if we go around all the punctures and go all around the loops, we'll get a formula which mixes the monodrome matrices at each puncture with the connection matrices. So this should be equal to the identity. Now here, since our basis of states are really the eigenfunctions of omega, we know explicitly omega, because omega is just diagonal. It's e to ip1, e to minus ip1. OK, so here we have a lot of expressions for a lot of unknown functions. And the key point that one can use is that one can eliminate half of those formulas by taking another quantity and taking a shift by ipi, let's say, of the spectral parameter. And now, once we insert those expressions here, we get a whole set of functional equations. Now, these functional equations do not really look like a Y system kind of expressions, so they have a different Arjun. It would be interesting to understand perhaps in what is the kind of generalized picture for such a multipuncture system. What is the origin of those? Well, here the geometrical origin is nice, but perhaps to interpret those equations in integrability, like in terms of standard Hirota or integrability like equations, would be quite interesting. However, fortunately, the resulting functional equations can be just solved explicitly, but by pedestrian approach. And the solution is as follows. So what we obtain in particular is that, for example, between puncture 3 and puncture 2, we get that this guy times this guy with a shift of I pi is given by the following expression, where here we have completely arbitrary pseudo-momenta at each of the punctures that define our states. So now if we plug in to P1, P2, and P3 our explicit form for the simple pseudo-momentum which is associated with the punctures approaching points on the boundary, what we get is we get this expression. Where here we have various combinations of the conformal weights, and here we have cos theta. And now this is very simple to solve. We see that the inverse of this kernel is just a cos kernel. We have only to be a bit careful with the asymptotics at large theta in order to have integrals which are convergent. So the basic functional equation to solve, in fact, is not one with sinh here, but with this factor, 1 minus e to minus e a pi cos theta. And now if we have this type of equation, we can just exactly write down the solution, which is given by the cos kernel integrated with log of the right-hand side. And of course, there's always a zero-mode part, where the coefficient of the zero-mode part are related to the integrals of square root of t and square root of t bar in the standard way. Okay, so now, once we have this expression, we can find the asymptotics of this expression. And then plugging it to our previous formula, we get this answer. So this was our formula. And now we can express these expressions, these integrals, in terms of the solutions of the functional equation in such a way, what is function h, h of I, a is given by the following integral. Okay, so this part, the regularized polynomial, is now completely explicit, explicitly expressed in terms of the conformal weights of the states. So where are we now? So, okay, so of course, because here we had this pi over 6, we had to generalize this Riemann linear identity. We wanted really to check this expression, whether it's really correct, whether we did not make any sign errors, and so on. So we implemented numerically a solution how to solve the regular, the generalized Singh-Gordon Pollmeyer equation on a sphere with three punctures. So here we have one puncture, another puncture is here, and then this is just one quadrant, and the third puncture is at infinity. So we found a solution for given deltas, and then we computed explicitly this regularized area just from the solution and compared it with this expression which we get from the functional equations. So we get here quite, at least for bigger deltas, we get very good agreement to high precision. Here for the lower deltas, we do not get such a good agreement, but in fact here changing the number of sides will modify at least those coordinates, so we cannot really believe those last digits here. And it's quite difficult to make it more precise at this, but for the moment it seems that it's okay. Okay. Okay, so at this stage, where are we now? So we split the area of the ADS part into this regularized Pollmeyer area, which is done, and the expression where we know the integrand because it's given this explicit rational function in terms of given in terms of deltas over the sphere with the punctures with some small epsilons eyes around each circles, which are cut out around each puncture. Of course, one has to remember that to this we have to add the unknown S5 contribution. And it's also convenient to regularize this unknown contribution by subtracting off this exactly the same expression and adding this term. So now what we will do, we will evaluate this part coming from here and from here and leave this part to be determined later as the remaining problem. Now, perhaps I would like to comment here. Of course, all this could be done also for the two-point function. So what happens for the two-point function in this picture? For the two-point function, it turns out that both this expression here and this expression are zero. But they are zero for quite different reasons. So this expression is zero because it is just a geodesic solution. So the solution is trivial. The Pollmeyer function is just zero, roughly. So therefore, it just cancels out and that's it. However, the S5 contribution, this is zero, but it's true for any kind of finite gap solutions, which have like non-trivial Pollmeyer data. And this cancellation is due to wave functions. So it turns out that somehow these wave functions kind of simplify the problem very much, because we do not really need to compute the action for the S5, but get something which is much simpler. So we have zero here and zero here, but I mean, this is trivial zero, while this is zero, which is kind of not so trivial. And it would be good to understand, I mean, perhaps for the three-point functions, there may be some simplifications also here. So the S5 problem may turn out not to be so complicated as it should be, it seems also to be. Okay, but now we have to deal with this integral. So we have to calculate this integral as a function of epsilon i's, and then we have to link those epsilon i's to our target space cutoff, z equal to epsilon. And it turns out that this integral can be done analytically. And what we get, we get some finite contribution plus delta squared log epsilon 1, delta squared log epsilon minus 1, and delta squared infinity log epsilon infinity. What is finite expression is some net mass expression, but it's given by the first terms, and there are a couple of other terms here. So let me leave this part for a moment and concentrate on this part here, which is divergent. Now the key point is to link these cutoffs to the target space cutoff, z equal to epsilon, and to the positions of the operator insertion points. So we have to find a reconstruction formula how to proceed from Pollmeyer data, how to get those quantities, the target space quantities of our surface. And it turns out that the classical solution in ABS2 is uniquely specified by a choice of two specific solutions of the linear system at theta equal to zero. So we have to just pick two solutions which are normalized in such a way, and this was enough to specify completely the solution in ADS2. And then it turns out that the coordinates of the punctures can be easily found by taking a product of the K solution with psi B divided by K solution K times psi A, where K is the standard solution in each of the puncture which I showed before. Moreover, the target space cutoff and the redshift cutoff are linked by the following expression. Here we have the anonymized dimension of the operator. Here's the redshift cutoff, here's the target space cutoff, and here we have, again, a product of K and psi A. So we see, it turns out now that these expressions are enough to evaluate this expression in terms of directly, first of all, the target space data, namely xk and epsilon, and the overlaps kl at theta equal to zero. So these are just simple algebraic relations, and one can just compute this expression. So let me just show what it is. So first of all, we get the standard space-time dependence, namely x to 3 over epsilon times delta 2 plus delta 3 minus delta 1, and so on. So this is one part which arises. And we get an additional contribution which comes from the OPE coefficients, which come from the products, namely products of 3, 2, 1, 3, and 1, 2, which are evaluated at theta equal to 0. Now, as you recall, but in principle, we have those products from the functional equations. And if you recall, the expression from the functional equations consists of two parts. One part is the zero mode part, and another part is an integral expression coming from solving the functional equations. And here, what is very nice, it turns out that the zero mode part of all those expressions, if we put them together, it exactly cancels this ugly finite piece which we had before. So this just goes away. So those ugly delta squared logs cancel out. And we obtain just a non-zero contribution from the non-trivial part of those guys, which is given by an exponential of an integral of this log 1 minus e to pay by cos theta. Okay, so now if we put together all those expressions, the final answer that we get for the OP coefficient is, first of all, this unknown contribution from the S5, and our explicit answer, which is given, can be again written this way. Well, now those P tilde and P tilde, they involve contributions both from the regularized Pollmeyer area and from this finite, from this contribution of those terms here. So it turns out that the solution is exactly the same as before, but now this H is changed into H tilde, which differs from the previous expression by its different prefactor in front of the logarithm. So the two parts combine nicely into something of this structure. Okay, so let me just describe in the last slide some features of this expression. So now we can take various limits and see what comes out. So this is our expression. And the first limit is to take the extremal limit, namely when 2 delta is equal to delta infinity. Now, in this case, we expect the OP coefficient to be equal to exactly 1, because it is the case of trace Z to the J, trace Z bar to J. And of course, it does not have any e to the square root of lambda terms. So how does it work here? So this just vanishes without any problem. This goes to 0, but it turns out that this P tilde minus 1, 1 blows up with the coefficient minus 1 over 6. And this minus 1 over 6 exactly cancels this term here. And at the end of the day, everything will cancel out, so we have exponent of 0, and we get 1. So this is one check. Now we can look what happens when we take delta to be very large. Then, looking at the expressions, we see that those H tilde, they vanish exponentially up to some power prefactors at large arguments. So therefore, all those terms will be exponentially smaller, which is quite a strange result that ADS contribution just gives a constant e to minus square root of lambda divided by 6, which does not really depend in any way on the precise values of deltas. It's enough that delta divided by square root of lambda is large for that to hold. And numerically, I mean, the coefficient is quite small. So like delta equal to 10 is to very good agreement equal to just to this expression. So there's a huge simplification here. Now another interesting limit is to take the limit of small deltas. Now for small deltas, as I told you here, if the argument is small, there's a power singularity, first of the pole, minus 1 over divided by 6a, minus 1 half log a. And it turns out that, first of all, these terms will all cancel out. So this will get cancelled out, and here everything will cancel out. So the leading contribution comes from the subleading term, minus 1 half log of a. And then we get this type of expression, which is quite nice. And what is quite funny is that, well, funny, not funny. Nice is that this limit coincides with the expression Clausen-McLaughlin, which was obtained there. So it's, in this way, one could say that this small delta limit is like going from heavy, heavy, heavy to medium, medium, medium. And then it's quite natural to get this medium, medium, medium from this construction here, because it used geodesic approximation. So if we have states which are not sufficiently heavy to really make any kind of extended solution, to a good extent, the solution will look like geodesics, which would then somehow meet in some quantum level. And this was exactly the setup which was considered in this paper. So the classical part should have this factor, and in fact, it's exactly what they get in the paper. Yes, I guess that one should not be able to completely separate out. So at least this is a part of the result which they have. I guess if you would consider concrete states like on the S5, you would get additional contributions. But this part just came from the, I think, ADS vertex operators in the computation. And so that's why this is the thing which I compare. Okay, of course, one has to. This is words of caution, namely, that we cannot really treat those expressions as OP coefficients because one has to add the S5 contribution and we do not control what is this behavior. So it may, for example, very well wash out this behavior, but something like E2 plus square root of lambda over 6 and so on, and some further dependence. So I guess this should be really taken as part of the answer and not as a full OP coefficient. Okay, so now I will just go to the summary and outlook. So first, you have considered operators dual to classical strings on S5, and you have evaluated the universal ADS part of the OP coefficient, which depends only on the dimension of operators. So it's universal in the sense that if we take another set of operators on the S5, then always this part will be present. The only thing which will change will be the S5 contribution will be modified. But this part will be always there and always will have the same form. Now, of course, what would be very nice is to do some checks. But unfortunately, since we do not have the full answer, we cannot really check with some, like, more complicated protected BPS operators and so on. So one possibility which would be very interesting to investigate would be to compare with these heavy, heavy light computations in the limit when the delta light goes to infinity. But here, one should be careful because very probably one cannot just use the results in the literature to do this computation because in this limit, one should also perhaps get contribution from back reaction and from the back reaction of the light operator on the classical Rothschild and also from vertex operator contributions. So I guess one should modify this computation in order to compare. But it will be very interesting to see if there's a matching from those two approaches. And of course, the main open question is the S5 contribution, which remains to be done. So thank you very much.
When deltas were large, you saw that the result was very simple and universal. Yes. Did you try to compute the shape of the surface in this approximation? Probably something simplifies, right?
Yeah, but we didn't try. No. But definitely, it's very interesting. It should be possible. Perhaps, it should be perhaps possible. Also, the problem here, I would say, because before doing that, it has various kinds of limits. And always it turned out that the kind of limits were very much non-uniform. So one would have to take different limits in various parts and then glue them together. And it was quite complex. So, but definitely, perhaps it's possible. Yeah. But we didn't... we didn't try it. But it's definitely very interesting. It should be possible. I agree that it should definitely be possible to get that limit.
Other questions, comments?
So maybe a trivial question, but can you repeat what are these K's and L? Are these like the small solutions?
So around each puncture, this linear system will have a non-trivial monodomy matrix with two eigenvalues. And around puncture K, the two solutions, the two eigenfunctions are k and k bar. And then L is around another puncture, and those connection matrices are the how to pass from one basis to another basis. Yeah. In fact, also, we didn't really study this problem because we did not have all the expressions worked out. So, in fact, the simplification in the large tangent only appeared a few days ago. So.
Did I understand correctly that if you consider GKP string, which sure. rotates in ADS3, closer. So if you consider the GKP string solution, which rotates in ADS3 and has no charge in S5, then the formula you gave, you found gives us just the complete classical structure constant.
I would say not necessarily. So it doesn't follow from the formulas. It may be that because there are two difficulties. First of all, we use Polman reduction for ADS2. Well, then it's Polman reduction for ADS3, which is roughly similar. So perhaps the functional equations, I guess, perhaps this part, the part on the... I would guess that kind of this general part would be true. So very, very probably the overlaps would could be obtained. What would be definitely different would be the treatment of the second part, namely the behavior close to the punctures. And for the spinning string, it's quite... So here it gave some contributions. And I would say that the general construction formulas are quite different, so one would have to reanalyze them. It may be that everything would cancel out and one would get this result, but...
But in this case, you would not have the contribution from the sphere.
Sorry?
You would not have a sphere contribution.
No, but the treatment of this, the treatment of this of this part would have to be done quite differently. And also there would be no T of W in a way. So, I would say that there would be lots of differences. Mm-hmm. But very probably, I would say not. Differences which could be overcome, but I cannot say that the same formula would hold, because there are too many differences on the way. But perhaps may hold or not.
Maybe a premature question, but if you make lambda finite, say the operators are still large, but lambda is finite, you have a principle similar objects, but quantum, yes? But all of them have some description. Do you imagine progress here, or there is some principal obstacle?
Yes, so I guess one would have to somehow generalize the Y system in some way, because the conventional Y system would not be enough, because the conventional Y system only is sensitive, like TAS is a trace of TAS, the transfer matrix, is a trace of the monodomain matrix, like around each puncture, so it loses information about relative orientations. But I'm sure that there must be some kind of more general kind of Y system in quotes, which would somehow also incorporate this information. So I very much hope that one like more generalized Hirota. So there's something beyond Hirota, to be very, which somehow mixes the representation theory and the topology in some way. But of course, I don't know how to do it. But I guess I would expect that progress should be possible in that aspect.
Are you saying that a complicated field redefinition could relate your equations to the thermodynamical bubble ansatz of Maldacena, Amit, and Pedro? No, so, you don't expect this.
Well, at least looking at those equations, I don't see a similarity.
You don't see it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, so yeah. I would say also it's kind of for different quantities, because there was always like closed loops. So it's something different, but it should also have some interpretation, like the Gabor field theorists. So
you also don't have any comments on fluctuations on this? You want first to
finish? No,
no. Any other question, comments? Okay, then let's play.